to the Fitz Life Unfiltered podcast with Kim and Jamie Fitzpatrick, former employees turned successful online entrepreneurs, speakers, parents, and couple. Thank you for tuning in. We know your time is valuable, and their goal is to help you live abundantly, provide value and tips on achieving physical, mental, spiritual, and financial wealth while navigating this crazy-ass thing we call life. Are you ready? Let's go!
I have a very special guest today on the Personal Perseverance Project. Jamie Fitzpatrick, growing up, was the captain to many sports teams and was a crew boss for the British Columbia Forest Service. Jamie earned a bachelor's degree in physical education and a master's degree in leadership and administration. Jamie then built and founded his first business chain, Bark and Fitz Pet Store, that grew to 23 locations across North America. Jamie and his wife, Kim, then built a multiple eight-figure business in global wellness, retail sales, being in the top of his industry of 400,000 distributors. Jamie had a near-death life event where he suffered a massive heart attack and was basically not alive for 9 minutes while his wife performed CPR on him to keep Jamie alive. Most important, Jamie is a husband and father to his two kids. You do not want to miss Jamie's story and the life lessons he is going to share. Let's dive right into today's interview with Jamie Fitzpatrick. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Personal Perseverance Project. I'm so excited about this next episode, and thank you guys so much for the messages and the feedback I've been getting in the last couple of interviews. It means a lot, but I'm really excited about our guest today. You heard his bio, Jamie Fitzpatrick, somebody that I got to know personally, both as a friend, as a super successful entrepreneur with him, his wife, podcast, so much to share. So I want to dive right into it. Jamie, thank you so much for coming on and welcome to the show, my brother.
Thank you, sir. I remember the first time I met you. I knew who you were. I don't know if you knew who I was. It was in San Diego. It was at a leadership.
Oh, at the leadership conference.
We were working out next to each other.
Yeah, I remember. I do remember that. You were there. You were not with Kim, I don't think, when I met you the time.
No, right?
I remember meeting you then, and man, just watching your journey and getting to know you and watching you and your wife. It's amazing. So
been fun.
Good time. So Jamie, I'd like to dive into it. You know, people know your background already. They know your bio, everything you accomplished. And the big thing that I noticed right away is from your younger years until present day, whether it was when you were the captain of some of the sports teams growing up, what you did on that Forest Fire, three-man team, like you've always been a leader from your younger years until now. And leadership, sometimes people are born with it. They have innate skills that they have to develop, but sometimes it's not. They get put in positions of leadership and they grow into it. So for you, from younger years to now, I look at you and go, wow, Jamie is just a leader. He gets it. But have you always been that way, or is that something you grew into in your life?
Man, that's a tough one, right? Because I feel like you're right. Like even when I was playing, you know, even when I was like 8 and 9 years old playing high level hockey and stuff, which is hard to grasp leadership when you're that age, I think, or maybe it's not. You and I are far more older now, but I think, for me, my father was a leader, and his role, he was a superintendent of schools. He coached me in a lot of things. So I'm sure I saw that leadership from him in those mentor roles, coaching roles. He was kind of the boss of the school system. So that, you know, when your male role model in your life, when you're younger, is your father and he's in those positions, I'm sure that had an impact on me and how I saw him operate and deal with people and his social skills and stuff. I think for me, because I had this sports background, And it's funny because I always joke, and I don't know if I've ever joked with you about it, but when I do calls with people or our organizational calls and stuff like that, I do always say I had that little bit of an insecurity growing up as a kid about being book smart and intellectually smart. Mm-hmm. My brother was really smart and I had this insecurity. I didn't feel like I was that intelligent or that I was going to be able to figure out my mortgage when I was an adult. Like all those little things that go through your mind when you're coming up through elementary and high school, I did have some insecurities about that. But ironically, when I played sports, so, you know, when I played volleyball, I was the setter. When I played basketball, I was the point guard. When I played hockey, I was the center. When I played baseball, I was the shortstop. I was in all these positions in sports that you had to understand what was going on. I'm the setter. I needed to know where people were. Shortstop in baseball, I had to know what was going on. I was the infield captain, you know, so point guard, same thing. I'm calling. So I was always kind of put in those positions on the court or the ice or whatever I was playing. And I think I've got, you know, in hockey, we call it puck sense. Every sport has their thing. I could always see the game very well and understood not just my position, but what everyone was supposed to be doing. So while I had these intellectual insecurities, I guess I was had a lot of sports intelligence and I was put in those roles really early on to be a captain of a lot of those teams and stuff like that. So I think maybe a combination of you know, this is why sports are so important for people, I think, and kids. You learn to deal with other people, obviously. And I think you can embrace some of those leadership roles as a kid. And then I naturally, just as you move through high school and then into college and stuff, I was a teacher, and then I wanted to get into administration again, those leadership roles. So, you know, I think it's probably, I don't know if I'm giving you the right answer, but it's probably a combination of some mentors I had in my life and just, and I think sports really guided me into a leadership role.
I mean, we see it with the kids. I see it with, you know, my three daughters. My middle daughter is an ice hockey player. My wife always says that's your son, you know, playing at a high level, and I love it. And you see just the locker room and how it develops. And, you know, but to the point of that, Jamie, I think it's also important people should know is that you never stop growing, right? So you're a leader. Like, I've seen all the things you've accomplished up until now, but you today still as a leader are investing in yourself to continually grow. And some people think I've achieved it, I'm there, and it's the pinnacle. It's not, it's always a growth journey.
It's, I mean, I won't show you around this because it's actually my wife's office, but I kind of share it with her. But I mean, I'm not kidding. There's probably 200 personal development books. my actual laptop is on a stack of them. There are some back there. There's like, and it's not just that. And I've shared this with people, and this isn't a big flex. You know, we don't need to talk about income or money, anything like that. But like Kim and I, if I had to add up the amount we've spent on conferences, courses, our own mentors, everything that we've done to try to improve ourselves, it's got to be in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. It has to be. And I think what some people don't understand, and I'm not trying to be disrespectful to anyone, but there's, you know, this kind of that CEO versus employee mindset. And I've been an employee before, but I think people, if you have to hire someone to help you get to the next level, or you want to take a course, or you want to go to a conference and you want to improve yourself, I think a lot of people look at that as an expense. It's an expense. Yeah. Oh, it's $3,000. That's that money block. Oh gosh, money going out. Scarce.
Right.
For me, it's a multiplier.
Yes.
It's an income multiplier. So I've never, and I'm not saying don't spend $100,000 to go for a weekend course somewhere if you can't afford it and it's going to bankrupt. Right. I'm not talking about that, but there's a lot of opportunities for people out there, and you're not going to get them all right. And some courses may not serve you, and some of these things may not, but I would say for most of the stuff Kim and I have done, it's been incredibly rewarding. And the cool part is even the ones that maybe weren't, we learned maybe more from them sometimes about what not to do and what we don't want to do in our business.
Exactly.
So it's like, I think that's the one thing that people get afraid of is investing in themselves because they're worried about the money. And I get that. And everyone's financial situation is different, but man, it is so necessary for growth and entrepreneurship. And we will continue. Like, my wife's away right now. She went to Vegas.
Right.
It's expensive. She's going to this weekend and week with her mentor that we hired. But I my mindset, I can't view it as an expense. It just isn't for me. She's going to come back better and make X amount of that money through her own business. So, I just think it's so essential.
You know, I think that I have two things to say. That number one is I remember going to a conference early years of Business Days, and it was Dani Johnson, and she says your level of personal growth is going to directly align with the bottom line of your bank account. And I was like, that is so true. And I remember early on for the first 2 years in building my body business, I didn't do PD. Like I was, you know, not a newer trooper, but I was like, I don't need that. Cause I think most people think that's rah, rah stuff. I don't need to invest in myself and grow and spend. And I remember my business plateaued in for 2 years, and my mentor at the time, Robert Hudgens, said to me, and I said, Rob, like, what's going on? He's like, what are you reading? And I'm like, I'm not. He goes, that's your problem, you know, because you don't know what you don't know. And I know I just mentioned to you before, like I paid just for two quick calls with somebody like $5,000. I have no problem sharing that because I think people need to know. And again, like you said, if you don't have it, you don't have it.
Yeah.
But you have to invest in yourself. It's super important. And it is an investment. But man, oh man, that is so important.
It's crazy to see, like, you know, you and I are workout guys. It's crazy to see, you know, men in really good shape who really care about their fitness, they'll go to the gym and hammer out an hour workout and it's brutal and they're sweating and it's hard, but they can't pick up a book for 15 minutes a day. Like it's the easiest thing for people to not do. Right.
I know. Absolutely. Absolutely. And you always got to be reading. And the book I'm reading right now, I don't know what you're reading right now. I'm reading Deion Sanders' book, Elevate and Dominate. It is great. You know, I'm like sending it to my mother, my brother. I'm like, you guys got to read this. She's like getting on Audible because it's a great book, but it's just, and you see the way he thinks and the way he operates, but that's a great recommendation. But you always have to be reading and growing. And, you know, you took one of the questions I was going to ask you is the importance of personal development. So thank you for the motivation. But Jamie, what keeps you motivated now day in and day out? Because you're always growing. You know, you and Kim are always growing. Business, your wheels are always turning. Like, what is your motivation day to day?
Man, I always have said this out loud. I'm like, you know, motivation is bullshit, but we all need to be motivated. The problem with motivation is it's temporary typically. Right. And if you don't have some internal clock, internal desire, internal manifestation, let me put it this way.
Discipline.
And I always call it like most people are smart enough to do whatever they want. Most people, some are. Most people,
right?
Most people do have the work ethic in them to do certain things. Some things they don't. So I don't think everyone's capable of everything, but I think there's a lot of really talented people who probably don't live out to their potential, whatever that means to them or you or their happiness and all that stuff. I think that most people lack a standard. Typically it's got to be a standard of excellence in everything you do. We're not perfect. We're human beings living a human experience, highly faulted. You know, I've talked to you a little bit. We all go through stuff. We all have vices. I certainly do. But I think any success I've had, quote unquote, whether it's in my marriage or my relationships or as a business owner, as a leader, I try to play up here as much as possible, as much as possible. And not only because it makes me prideful. And I think that is one of the most important things personally is to have pride in what you're doing. And that's keeping promises to yourself and all those things. Right.
Yeah.
And the promises and the pride thing for me, it's like, if I have those things and I'm doing things like taking care of myself and making more better decisions than worse ones over time, if I want to have an excellent life, if I want to have an income that, you know, really gives me and my family opportunities and my kids more than anything opportunities, because we all know kids and sports and activities, how expensive it is. And it's just going up, you know, my son's football helmet was $1,000. I'm like, how did I not know a football helmet was $1,000? Like, it's just crazy. Anyway. So me intellectually understanding that, my level of excellence, my standard in everything I do, it has to be up here.
Plus,
I have a partner who lives that way too, and I'm trying to keep up with her. so it's in our relationship too. I know, and I'm not a relationship expert. I'm not a psychotherapist. I don't give marriage advice, but I'm about to. But like, I would argue that most people, and I think some people just aren't meant to be together, but I would argue that typically, you know, when there's a gap in that relationship, a lot of times some one person's doing the work and another person isn't. And it can be different avenues of their life. Yeah, whether it's wellness or business or their job or parenting, how they deal with their kids. One person is elevating their game and one person isn't. And that's a tough bridge, right, to get through, to keep that relationship. So I think I'll just speak for Kim and I, and I'm not just blowing smoke. Like, our relationship is better than it's ever been because we're both trying to elevate our personal game and make sure we're good. Not so much that our relationship is good, because that happens naturally if we're both operating up here. You know, living with integrity and truth and speaking our truth to each other and seeing each other improving physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, you know, all those things that we're both individually doing, that's what's making things so, so incredible right now between us. Does that make sense?
No, it does, because there's that saying, success leaves clues. And I think until you hear, like, you're sharing something, you've been through it, and you're saying how much better life can be improved when you invest in yourself. And it's the same thing. I remember early on when marriages struggle, and like, at times it's, if one's growing and one's not, like you said, that's a tough bridge. I just sent a picture of a quote to Kristen from actually the Deion Sanders book, where he talks about there's nothing more powerful than two people working together at the same cause. And I sent it to her because it's just our reminder every day to grow in all areas, relationship, our faith, business, mindset, you know, because life always gets harder. And it's just so powerful. And the only time I think, maybe it's not motivation. I know, I love when Tony Robbins, I think he said, it's when your shoulds become your musts. So like, when you have your kids that rely on you, and I want to give them a life that becomes above and beyond, it's that why and driving force. Like, you have no choice, you know? And then when you achieve a higher level, you see how much better it is and how much better it feels, you know? And that could be in all areas. Like, I'm adding extra runs in during the week, just doubling up. Why? Because it's for my mental well-being. I feel good. I'm more creative. I'm better as a husband, right? I just think it's constant. It's so
I'm trying to have those conversations with our kids who are, you know, my son's 15 now, Tess is 12. So they're getting it, right? They're starting to understand some stuff. And I try to explain to them that, like, you know, it's not just your mom and I are a team for sure. And I think we portray that in front of them in every way, but like, the us four are a team. For us to expand and grow and be happy, this house and how we all interact with each other, we're a team. Like, you got to protect your goalie, like, at all costs, right? Like, you know, you're like that. And so they both play sports, so they both kind of get that analogy. Right. It's like, no, we're a team. We're a unit. Right. We have to be operating together. And so, you know, because our two kids, son and daughter, they're like that sometimes. And you know, and that's, family members do that and teams do that. And I get it, but it's like, how do you come out the other side of that? And how do you solve those problems and stuff? So, and there's another, I'm probably going to butcher it, but, and I can't remember who said it, but it's like, I think they're called Belgian horses, right? And there's a certain type, and, you know, individually they can pull like 800 pounds. One Belgian horse can pull 800, the 800. But if you put them together to pull something, they can pull like 3,000, right? So it's like, I think, and you know, you and I in our past business, we saw this all the time. It's like, I never understood, and I'm not picking on men, because I am one and you are one. And, you know, we're guys, and we like sports and beer, and we swear, and we're, you know, but like, I never understood just the lack of support from a spouse sometimes for another spouse trying to run a business or start something new, or even work on themselves. And listen, there's insecurity and jealousy, and we won't get into that part of people's persona, but it's like, is that a defense mechanism? Do you not feel good about what you're doing, so you don't want the other person to grow beyond you?
Right.
Might be it too. I always had a trouble with that, because gosh, like, aren't we all just trying to push in the same direction?
Exactly. Totally.
You know,
You know, you're making me think of two things. It's, we are a team as a family. And a story I always share is, I had no idea. So my one daughter, well, out of the three daughters, I had no idea that when my daughter Sadie started playing ice hockey and asked for 2 years, and we said no, And we kept saying no, and how much she's developed in the work ethic and the perseverance. And all my daughters, I like to share when I speak, and I'm saying, you think that when you give up or you quit on something that it's just affecting you, but you don't realize that your kids are watching everything that you are doing. And you think it's about what you say, but it's not. It's how you show up and what they do. And even as they joke, like even now at times, if we're, our kids are going through a rough patch, I'll be in the kitchen, Jamie, and I'd be like, no, you guys, listen, you're facing some adversity. It's okay. And they're like, God, enough. I don't need some motivation pep talk. You know, I constantly get that. But like, I'll be away and my wife, Kristen, will say like, they're getting it or they're saying things and they may make fun of us and dad, we don't need your motivational, but that's the reality. We are a team and they are the most important people that we should try to directly impact. And when they watch mom and dad do it, you know, and they see through what they said and they push through tough times, which we all do. That's the impact. That's the legacy. It's the kids and your generations and grandkids. So, so powerful.
Yeah, What really got me again, can't remember who said it. What really got me is like, maybe it was Cody Jefferson. I can't remember. But it's like, you know, as your kids are growing up, one day as they get old enough, they're going to figure out who you are.
Right. Yeah.
Like, and my son is 15. He's like, you know, and you say, well, you see, they're like, they're figuring out who you are. So who are you?
Right.
Who are you? What's your integrity level? Can they trust you? You know, are you being a good spouse to their mom or their dad? They're smart. They get it. They're starting, totally. They're going to figure out who you are. That totally. 2-year-old you have right now, the 2-year-old you have, one day they're going to know who you are.
Absolutely.
So govern accordingly. Like it matters. It's important.
We can spend a whole hour just talking about your kids and your impact. But it just remember for all the parents out there, your kids aren't doing what you say. I mean, they are, but they're really watching what you do and how you show up in life is going to make a difference. And that should be a why within itself.
And so, and just to interrupt you. Sorry, David. Yeah, I certainly don't want to come across as like, you know, a know-it-all or we're perfect parents. 'Cause everyone knows that's just impossible. And you know, I think it's also important. And we had this sit down with my son last year who, and I can share this openly, who, you know, I've dealt with different things in my life, but we'll talk about the, you know, the event that I had.
It's already almost been
5 years ago, but,
wow.
You know, I think my son for a while, he had some trauma from that because he was at the time he would have been 9 or 10 when that happened. So there's some trauma there for him, right? Yeah. And, you know, I could tell he was kind of going through some stuff, always a good kid, nice kid. I think he, in some ways, I don't know how this is going to come across. It might sound egotistical. He had me on this pedestal and maybe a lot of us have our fathers on a pedestal. But I think he knew I was quote unquote successful in certain things in my life. Right. And coming from the business we came from, he knew that people knew who I was.
Right.
You know, and he would see us interact and stuff like that. And I think in a way he felt pressure from that he had to be something or a certain someone. Mm. And I actually, Kim and I sat him down last year one day and actually shared with him a struggle I was having in my life.
Right.
And something clicked in him. It was interesting. And so I wanted to bring that up because I think as important as it is, as we're trying to be great humans, never perfect because that's impossible. Right. Great humans and great parents. I think it's, you know, I always say we're human beings living a human experience and we're going to mess up and we're going to do some stupid stuff and we're going to make mistakes as parents because first time for everyone. Right.
Absolutely.
And when we shared that with him, I could see a click for him to realize like, oh, okay. That takes the pressure off a little bit. Like there's, you know, and we all as humans have to find grace in our faults.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Know, I think our kids do put us on a pedestal and they think it always goes well. And we've had conversations too. Like I told you in the month of January, I had a rough month with some things going on. And I shared that with one of my daughters that was going through rough times at school. I'm saying, listen, it's how we're going to respond. We get knocked down. I struggle too. And I shared that. She's like, really, Dad, that happened to you? And I'm like, yes. And she's feeling bad. I'm like, it's not to feel bad. I want to let you know, like we all struggle. It's okay that you're struggling. You're not perfect. And to your point, it relieves a little bit of the pressure, you know, because they see us in the spotlight at times. you know?
Yeah, I want them to try. That's all I want them to do, is be able to try new things and see us fail, see us succeed, but just fear will get the best of us if we let it. So
absolutely. They are the most important thing to us. So Jamie, you are a teacher, you got your master's, and eventually there came a time where you decided, like, I'm going to pursue this entrepreneur thing, which I like to say is you got to be willing to bet on yourself. It's scary. So if you remember, like, take me back to, like, you're there, you're a teacher. When did you decide to take that leap of faith? You know, Kristen was a teacher and she did the same thing when she went full time. But that's a mindset that you have to have, because most people won't do that. Most people, there's a lot of miserable people out there doing jobs they don't like and they're not happy. And, you know, but there's those like yourself that take that leap of faith. Like, do you remember that transition and what it took to take that leap?
Yeah, I'll try not to make the story too long, but like because it's a long story, but like my parents were both teachers. My brother was a teacher. I was a teacher. I taught high school for 7 years. I went and got my master's because I thought, I'm going to get into admin. You need your master's. I'm probably going to turn out to be a superintendent, hopefully at someday.
Right.
I was thinking good pay, pension. It's a good life. My parents gave me a good life, you know, we were middle class, but it was beautiful, you know.
And that is a great life.
That is a great life. Yeah, it's beautiful. You know, I'm so pro teacher. But my sister got into entrepreneurship and she moved because I grew up in the West Coast, British Columbia, Canada. And my sister had moved out to Ontario, which I'll give you a geography lesson, which is just kind of above Northern New York for everybody. Michigan, Northern New York. It's a big province. Anyway.
Yes, yes.
And you know, she had a successful retail store and my dad had done a few little entrepreneurial things. And even in his business as a superintendent, and this is going back 30, almost 40 years ago when the internet was just coming out, and online learning wasn't, you know, it's normal now. So he actually brought online learning to his school district and he was bringing in students from other districts because the government would give you money for every student that came in your district. So he was like the first one in Canada to be bringing in. He called it e-busing.
E-busing.
Now the other superintendents didn't like that because he was stealing students from people. but like think the first time you could take your high school education online. That was 30 years ago, maybe 40. I don't know, a long time ago.
Wow.
So he did that. So he had some of those, you know, ideas. And I just think my attitude. So when I finished my master's degree, I quit teaching about 6 months after that.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And I always thought, listen, I can always go back and teach. So I knew I had that education in my back pocket if I needed it. So it wasn't, I think, as fearful as it sounds, although I was losing my pension basically.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, seeing my sister have some success with it, and I was single and in the small town in BC, and we would come out to Ontario in the summer because my parents actually moved out here. And I think I've just always had an attitude. I just want to experience things. And I just thought, you know, I couldn't see myself teaching for 40 years. I think it's a great occupation for people, not knocking it.
Right.
I just wanted to try something new.
Right.
I just wanted to try something new. And so on a whim, my brother and I packed up, sold our houses in BC on a whim. We got in the car. We got in a car accident 2 minutes into the trip.
Oh my goodness.
We fixed the car. We were fine. And we drove out to Ontario. And within a year, again, this is 2003, so there were no dog stores or dog boutiques or whatever people call them nowadays. It was just like your pet stores.
Right.
And we decided to just open up a 2,000 square foot retail store for people with dogs. And it kind of looked like Banana Republic meets Lululemon meets like Pottery Barn meets Whole Foods. Like it was a vibe. Like you walked in and it was like, what is this place? You just had never seen anything like it. We color blocked leashes and we had very expensive stuff. But we opened the store in the highest per capita income place in Canada in Oakville, Ontario. And we kind of knew what we were doing. Even though it was the first time we'd both done retail.
Yeah.
So I spent actually a year. I took some of my savings and I spent a year researching the pet industry. And my brother found a little teaching job out here. And we found a place to rent on the main street there. And we just opened. And we
just went for it.
We just went for it.
Now, was your wife Kim in the picture now? Are you single? Nobody, like, you're this started?
Kim used to run by our first store.
Ah, I like that.
And so she used to run by the store. I was like, oh, that's a pretty girl running by the store every morning. So I would go out and sweep on purpose a little bit more, you know. And
I didn't know that.
Yeah, we never talked. And then she also was a waitress at the hockey rink where I would play men's league hockey.
Ah.
And then we still really didn't talk. And then I saw her at a bar one night. I'd broken my nose playing hockey and I didn't play that night. And she was off and we saw at the bar and that was it. So, but from an entrepreneurial standpoint, and I think maybe the lesson here is like, you know, we borrowed money from my parents. It was all paid back. But it was, I think entrepreneurship isn't for everyone. Mm-hmm. I think you do have to have a degree of courage / craziness / you know, I'm here to experience life and everything that comes with this decision to try something different. And that's going to be good, bad, failure, lose money, make money, meet amazing people, learn some lessons you don't want to like.
Right.
You got to be open to stuff if you're going to dive into that industry and whatever. Yeah. Now, I think nowadays with online, there's so many cool ways to earn an income and not have to put out that much money in capital. Mm. You know, I think there's a lot of ways to do that now. So maybe it's less risky, but yeah, to take $250,000 and throw it in a pet store is like, sounds crazy. And it was a little bit crazy, but God, like that experience. I mean, holy, I learned so much from that.
Unbelievable. Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, but for some people, for the context, like, all right, so entrepreneurship maybe not be for them, but what you could take from this is there's times in your life, take a leap of faith for that promotion. You know what I'm saying? Oh. Maybe put in the extra hours at work because you feel you could get promoted at work, or maybe get that master's degree to make yourself, you know, more available for other areas. So I think it's that this could be applied that sometimes you take the leap of faith and grow your wings on the way down, right? So for you went entrepreneur, but there's people that just take a leap of faith and don't accept your life every day for what it is and lead yourself to where you want to go. Cause everybody has dreams and goals.
Yeah. And I, you know, it's that old saying, life's not happening to you. It's happening for you. It's like even, you know, we open the store, people love it. It's a good vibe. Sales are great. A year after we open, people come in and they're like, is this an American franchise? Cause it had that feel to it. Right. Yeah. And we're like, no, it's just our store. And they wanted to franchise it. So I turned into a franchise guy. I've never franchised before. I'm looking at legal documents and like, you know, and next thing you know, we've got 23 locations. We had one in New Jersey, actually. The rest were across Canada. And then it actually went sideways. Business partner, and it just, you know, legal stuff, and it went sideways. And then, but the crazy part is, as great of a time as that was, and then as hard of a time as that was, it actually brought me to my next business, which you and I did together, you know? And so, and that turned out to be this blessing the last 9 years for our family. So it's like, you can't worry so much. And I would argue that the tough times I went through with our franchise and stuff, man, I learned more from that than anything.
Absolutely.
You know, just so my advice is like, you can't be so afraid of things. And I'm not telling people to throw everything out the window and just spend all their money on a new opportunity. I'm not saying that either. I think you need to do your research and stuff like that. But I'm here to live this life, man. I always have had that attitude even before what we'll probably talk about next. But like, I'm here for it all, the good, the bad, the experience, you know. And I said to Kim, you know, like I'm 51. I'm 51. and
you look good, brother.
Well, thank you. So do you. I'm gonna knock on wood, but like I said to her, man, if anything happens, I've lived the coolest life. I really feel that way. And you know, you and I can talk about gratitude forever and the practice of gratitude and that's a big part of it too. But I think life is meant to be lived and have different experiences.
I love it. Which will take us into the next point. So Jamie, I can't believe it's been 5 years.
Crazy,
I won't forget crazy for me where exactly where I was, in my family room. on my phone on social media and seeing your wife Kim post that I need prayers right now, prayers for Jamie. Please, everybody, pray. And I'm like, what WTF? I call Kristen in the kitchen. Kristen, something's going on. And like it spread quickly. And you went through, I'm not going to take it away. So, Jamie, why don't you tell us what happened? It was eye-opening for everybody and for you and your family. And share that story.
Yeah, it's, again, I can make it a one-minute story or a three-hour story. But, you know, I've been having your classic symptoms of a heart attack, numbness in the fingers. And I tell people this because, you know, we have a lot of people listening and I get questions all day, every week. People will like knowing what happened to me. They're like, hey, did you have this symptom? And I'm like, are you having these symptoms? Especially men, right? I'm like, don't be stubborn. Just
get it checked out.
Just because people, a lot of people don't. It's crazy how many people have messaged me going, I'm getting this feeling. I'm like, so I'm not a doctor. I've had experience and can tell you to go to the doctor. Is that what you want me to tell you to do?
Yeah.
You know, is it go to the doctor? I'm not a cardiovascular surgeon, but I've had it happen to me, but that's my advice. It's just be better safe than sorry. Anyway. So I'd been getting chest pain more like it wasn't when I was exercising. It was just this odd, like, and again, I don't want to freak people out here, but I'm just going to share my truth is that I went and got tested for everything because this was about a month before this happened, maybe even a month and a half, 6 weeks out. I was getting these classic symptoms. Went to the doctor, went to the cardiologist. I'm not blaming anyone because they literally gave me every test you could give me. And I got cleared. Months later, I can't remember, 6 weeks later, October 20. I always get this messed up, 27th or 29th. Anyway, I think it was 27th. And October 27th, 2019, Kim was actually sitting right here on a call. It was a Sunday. It's the only reason I'm alive, because it was a Sunday because our kids were home. Mm. Kim was down here on a call on a Sunday morning, you know, doing a Zoom call with her team.
Right.
And my daughter, Tessa, who was 7 at the time.
Wow.
I think I have that right. 7 or 8. And... 8, sorry, she was 8. And she'd asked me to go get her something. And I never came back. And she came looking for me. And again, normal weekday, she'd have been at school. I'd have been,
right,
you know. And she came and found me. And she we asked her after, right? After everything's good and clearly I'm okay from all this. I asked her after, I said, so... when you found me, how long did you wait to go get mom? Cause the, it was a Widowmaker, 80% blockage. Like that's the one that you don't, you know, I've got a tattoo on my arm 6 because the percentages are like when you're at home and you have this type of cardiac arrest, like a 6% chance of survival, 1% chance of no brain damage. My joke is the jury's still out on that one, but like you're, it's just, you know, it's a devastating thing to happen at home. Because no one's typically around people.
Right.
She found me and I asked Tessa, I said, how long did you wait before you went and got mom? And at first she's like, I think it was a minute, maybe longer. But it couldn't have been that long because you don't, you know, and I'm not a... You
and where were you, Jamie? Where did she find you?
Just upstairs in the living room. And okay. I was sweeping for some reason because I had a broom in my hand when she found me face first.
Okay.
And I was not a heart attack, full cardiac arrest. Like I was vital signs absent. I was gone. And she went, got Kim. Kim ran upstairs. You know, Kim's a trooper. She flipped me over like a canoe, and she's had CPR training from her work in gerontology with elderly people.
Wow.
And for 9-10 minutes she did CPR on me. I've told people when I'm talking to people, I'm like, if you just sit with a phone or a stopwatch and sit in silence for 10 minutes,
it's eternity.
It's eternity. And to have to do that to your spouse for 9 or 10 minutes, and I'm not coming around. Like I'm dying. I'm going through everything that happens to your body when you die. And she's trying to do CPR on me. You know, Tess is outside, ran and got the neighbor, Dan, one of my buddies. He came over and eventually held my head while Kim was trying to get me back. Anyway, 9-minute mark, my buddy now, Josh, firefighter, he he came in and I don't know, they use a little portable powder. You would know more than I do.
Yeah, little portable guys. Yep.
And they got me back in my living room after 8, 9, 10 minutes, whatever it was. Got me somewhat stable. And within an hour and a half, I had a stent in my heart and I was in the hospital. So, you know, the crazy part is, like, you know, my wife has PTSD from it. Mm. My daughter does. My son probably a little bit. But he wasn't around. It was my daughter who found me and was
right.
You know, I don't remember anything. Like, I don't remember the days before. They had to put me in a coma in the hospital because I was overheating. And I think that's common. I'm not sure.
Right.
But I don't remember the 5 days after. Like, there's a week period. There's a week long period. I have no. So a lot of times, like, I literally, it's weird to say, but I don't have that much trauma from it other than me actually understanding that I died and
what the kids went through and family.
And that's the thing for me is what my daughter went through. And I've always, she's a really confident kid. I think probably because so many people told her you saved your dad's life and she's a firecracker. She's like Kim, right? Like she's a confident little girl. So she's good there. But that was has always been my biggest worry. And Kim too, you know, it's like she's a trooper, man. And she just kept going and that's where my worry was, but I don't remember. I don't really have that much trauma from it in a sense, although I'm sure there's some psychological things that I'm still working through. I'm going to therapy, you know, it's a crazy thing to happen to you, you know, really wild.
No, absolutely. And I could tell you, Jamie, I've done CPR a lot when I was a trooper and 99% of the time, the person never made it. I had one person that came back that so many times, like, and my daughter is taking lifeguarding right now and she's doing CPR. And she's like, Dad, have you ever done CPR? Has it worked? And I said, I've done it many, 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 many times. The cracking of the ribs, the sounds, the color of the person. I've been there. And to your point with Kim, 9 minutes, like it is exhausting doing that and the breathing. And you normally don't make it through, but her quick thinking at least kept the circulation going and kept you alive. And it's just unbelievable. But Jamie, now that you're like, what did that do on your outlook at life? Like, what did that do for how you show up every day now, knowing like I say, life doesn't always fire a warning shot is something I like to say. So for you now, that happening must change the way you see and approach life each day.
Yeah. And I don't want to give a cliche or a canned answer. I really don't want to give you that. But I want to be really truthful about it. Like, cause you know, I've talked to now other, we call them NDEs or near death experiences and stuff like that. And I've talked to other people through the last 5 years who've had stuff like this happen and lots of conversations and, sure. All the things, right. I was grateful before. I've always had a good outlook on life. Is it more now? Sure. Yeah. I think for me, and maybe it's because, you know, I've now turned 50, 51, and I've had this experience of the cardiac arrest. I think more than anything, I've got this very hyper-focused awareness of time.
Mm.
And I don't think I can explain it properly to people because it's what I feel. And it's hard to explain what we all individually feel about certain things. But I just have this, I just can't waste minutes, time, seconds. I want to watch my kids do shit. I want to, you know, I don't even know if this is healthy or not. It's like, I have trouble sitting and watching a TV show or a movie because I feel like I should be doing something more productive, you know? I don't know what that means. I don't know if that's good or bad, but it's like, I, you know, if I'm sitting around not doing anything, I'll go for a walk because I know a walk is great for my heart and it's going to continue to do those things for me, or I'll go to the gym or I'll pick up a book, but I'm, you know, it's why, you know, and I have a good partner for that because she wants to be doing stuff too, whether it's business or anything like that. So she gets it, you know, and we're like, you know, we're best friends, and not, again, not to sound cliche that we have this perfect marriage, because we don't, because no one does, but like, you know, we have to tell each other, hey, Kim, let's sit down. Let's have this 15-minute coffee in the morning, because we both want to go do shit. We're just like, yeah, we got this and this and that. And we're like, and then we really enjoy that time with the coffee in the morning. Like, we make a point of it. Let's just sit, look at each other, and you know, have a coffee and talk about our day and us and what's going on. And but there's that, there's this urgency for me to have experiences. And, you know, last week I had this trip planned with some of my best friends from BC. I'm a big Vancouver Canucks fan, and I haven't seen them play. And I had this trip planned before my heart attack, cardiac arrest, that I was going to go see them right before that. We had to cancel it. So two and a half weeks ago, I flew back to BC and just spent four or five days with my buddies. And it was just
that's great.
And it just, and I know everyone does that, and that's not maybe special for people, but man, it's like, you know, you really want to taste your food. You really want to
life.
You want to appreciate and drink everything and just drink it all in and like hold on to experiences. I think for me, that's the biggest change, is I'm seeing different colors in my universe that I never maybe saw before.
Right. And you know what? Kim probably the same, because she witnessed it, the same event, and also realized how fragile life is, and you guys with your relationship and having that time to sit down. And you made me laugh, because just before we got on this podcast, I said to Kristen this morning, she was running out to do something and we've been busy. I'm like, can I get 15 minutes with you later? She's like, what do you mean? I go, we need 15 minutes. She goes, we need to talk. There's a lot going on right now. Right.
Isn't that
you
funny? Know?
Because you need that. I go, no kids, no that. Like, so we have that scheduled this afternoon, and it's important to have that time to just talk to your spouse. So that is great. So, Jamie, thank you for sharing, and blessed and grateful that, you know, you're here. And my goodness, that was scary for so many, but you had a lot of people supporting and praying for you. And
that was crazy.
And, it was absolutely, absolutely mind-blowing.
I'm going to cut you off again. Isn't it crazy that we, you know, there was so much support in our community, right? Mm-hmm. You and I were both a part of. And it made me appreciate that community even more, obviously.
Yeah.
But isn't it funny how we often wait to tell people how we feel when they're gone or about to exit this realm?
Yeah.
Isn't it funny how we wait till then?
Yeah.
And it's like we need to, cause that, you know, I went back after I recovered and everything, I went back and looked at the Facebook, some of the Facebook pages. Right. And to see the comments,
yeah,
it was like, holy, like it makes you feel supported and good. And like, everyone should have that experience before something bad happens, you know? And I'm just going to share this with you. I made a point to, I'll try not to get emotional. We were at our family sort of cabin cottage, and, you know, my family, my brother, sisters, mom, dad, you know, we, you know, Kim and I tell our kids we love them every day. We're big I love you people. But my family was never like that, even though we all get along incredibly well. Great family. We just weren't big I love you people.
Right.
And I one night, you know, a couple glasses of wine in, and this is about a year after that, I sat them all down at about midnight, all of them out around a table. And there were so many tears. And I went through each one of them and told them why I love them and how much I love them and why and what they've meant to me my whole life. And I just went, what? And then some people tried to talk. I was like, nope, I'm getting this out first. And I'm just crying. And
it's giving me chills.
Yeah. And I just, I spent about, you know, 3 to 5 minutes on each person. And I just went through all of them about what they meant to me and how I appreciate them. It's not easy to do. It's not easy to do, because you really have to get vulnerable and open up, especially as a man. But God, I know it was appreciated.
Oh man, that gives me chills thinking about that. Yeah, people don't do that. People, we hold back and put up these blockers to share how we really feel about people.
Yeah.
And that's wow, that's a powerful statement. Jamie, day in and day out, do you have a structured routine for your, just that you're intentional with? You know, I know you were walking a lot, you know, you working out, reading, like for people that maybe just kind of, which is most people, I feel like most people wake up, they just go through the motions of life. We're in complete reactive mode and whatever happens, happens. But I believe people that are succeeding in all areas of their life, they're intentional with their time, right? Like you said, time is just so important. So what about you, like day in and day out? Do you have routines or things in place that you do to keep yourself always growing, always improving?
Yeah, Kim's much more of a structured morning person with her activities that she does, but I tend to do the same things too. I always write down what I'm grateful for. I always write that down. I don't spend a lot of time, quote unquote, journaling. I have in periods of my life done that, but I don't do it regularly, but I definitely write down what I'm grateful for. I try to do that before bed too. It's always water in the morning for me. Going back to the team aspect with Kim and I, and for us, it doesn't matter what job has to get done in the house, kids, business, doesn't matter what it is, as long as it's getting done by one of us and we're all happy and aligned, that's what matters. Again, that's back to that team aspect. So I know Kim's morning routine is really important for her before she dives into her businesses.
Right.
So, you know, I'm also smart enough to understand there's some things I should be doing that will take the pressure off of her so she can do what she needs to do with her businesses and life too.
Yeah.
Because she needs to do some personal things for her mindset in the morning that maybe I don't have to do all the time.
Yeah.
So we've gotten the routine. I literally get up, water. I actually do the kids' lunches every day. I clean up the kitchen, do the dishes, do that kind of stuff. I let her do the stuff in the morning that she needs to do in the basement. And then once I kind of get the kids out the door, make them breakfast and they're out the door and she'll come up and join us for that and all that stuff. Then I worry about my personal health, but I'll do my walk. I'll usually do an afternoon weight workout.
Yeah.
But I walk every day without it. Walking is just like so underrated for a bunch of different reasons. But yeah, that's really what I try to do from a structured point. And again, it's like, we're a team and it's as long as the wheels keep turning. And I think it's important to be like, I think self-awareness is a critical skill for all of us. And I'm aware of what I'm good at. I'm aware of what I'm not good at. And just like she is, and we try to really fill the gaps in for each other on that and talk about it. And it's like, I've been asked this question before too. Like actually one of my buddies in BC, cause he knows what I've been doing and he works for the government. I would be scared. How'd you know what to do as an entrepreneur? And I'm like, I didn't, I just did. And I learned and you just go and you just make a decision and you learn from it. And I said, he said, what are you really good at in entrepreneurship? I said, I don't know if it's as important. I know what I'm good at, which I think I'm good with people. Like I can relate to a lot of different people. You know, I understand the business from a technical standpoint, different businesses and how things operate and email lists. And, you know, I understand that stuff. But I think more importantly, I understand what I'm not good at.
Yeah, which is important.
And I have enough self-awareness to know what my weaknesses are. And we're at a stage in our business now where if I can find someone who does something that needs to get done and they're just way better at it than I am, I'm going to hire them to do that because I want that standard of excellence that I can't provide in that category.
Exactly.
I'm going to hire someone who's amazing at it to do that. And I'm okay. My ego is small enough. I don't have this ego where I need to micromanage everyone. And that's my strength is I find people who are amazing at it and love that aspect, but come do this. And then we work with them. Right. That's a big one, I think, with entrepreneurship.
No, I love it. And I think back to the original question, I think you answered it. Like you're able to self-audit. You're able to, I mean, there is a routine. You're able to self-audit things you can do. You're able to recognize your spouse, what she needs. You do the things to be a team, and then you do your things to take care of you. And that's the magic. Like that's the structure. I think so many people, it's just we wake up, what do we got to do? What do you got? And it's just mayhem all the time.
Yes.
You give her space, then you do your thing and you have your space and you work together. And that's just absolutely, I absolutely love it. So thank you for sharing that. So Jamie, before I have like the last couple questions to close out, people that, you know, one is I want you to share a little bit about the podcast that you have so people can find it and then where people can find you in general if they want to connect with you. And then I'd really love to just ask you the last couple closing questions, but talk a little bit about your podcast and where people can find you.
Yeah, so Kim and I have a podcast. We do it weekly, or we try to do it weekly. it's called Fitz Life Unfiltered. Yeah, it's on Apple and Google and Spotify and all that good stuff. And we just honestly, we share a lot about life, business, marriage, typical things. We try to find a lot of humor in that. And you know what? It's a real way for Kim and I to kind of just speak freely about things and share our struggles with people and what we go through, and hopefully people can relate. And we actually talk about a lot of stuff you and I talked about.
Yeah.
And there's something very cathartic about sitting across from your spouse in a room for an hour and just like, because how often does that happen, right?
Well,
like
I'm trying to schedule 15 minutes later, so that actually is a good, let's get a podcast, babe.
There you go. That's great. Honestly, it's like, it's been really cathartic for us to just talk for an hour, you know, and just stare at each other. And there's, it's gotten feisty a few times too, because, you know, it's real and we want it to be raw and not, we're not trying to make everything so perfect. It's not like that at all. You know, I swear a little bit too much, but you know, it's so that's that. And then I'm on Instagram. Jamie Fitzpatrick Entrepreneur.
Yes.
And yeah, Kim's on there too, Kim Fitzpatrick. But yeah, that's what we're doing, and we're just keeping busy and teenagers, you know.
Absolutely. And I will put everybody in the show notes, Jamie's social media and his podcast links, so you guys can get it there. So Jamie, to close it out, last couple questions. So what do you say to somebody that maybe is stuck in their life right now? Maybe whether it's health and wellness, where maybe it's income, like they just know they need to improve. What's the one thing you would say, somebody, I want to get started, it's time, like where should they focus first? What would you do and talk to that person that feels stuck?
You know, I think there's a few different categories of being stuck, because some people probably feel stuck in certain parts of their life. But I'm a big energy guy. So I think if your energy is off, you're going to have trouble doing anything. Mm. And I know for me, speaking from personal experience, my energy comes from wellness.
Yeah.
And I know it's a broken record, but, you know, I have to take care of myself.
Mm.
And it's amazing when you start to take care of yourself and you start to physically feel better, even just a walk. You don't have to start a workout program, everybody. You don't have to, don't overcomplicate this if you're feeling like you haven't done anything for so long, right?
Yeah.
Start with a frickin' walk.
Yeah.
And grab a thing of water.
Mm.
And I know for me, I start to physically feel better. I start to mentally feel better, spiritually feel better. My energy goes up. My energy becomes more positive. Mm. I get confidence, you know, whether I'm not even talking about how you look, although that is a factor,
you know,
we all know you've lost 10, 20 pounds before, you know how you feel. You feel better in a bunch of different aspects than you did before. Now, whether that's ego or your energy, I'll let you decide that. But like for me, if you're stuck, I'll just share this. I'll see a super successful, let's say a realtor who's making $1 million a year.
Right.
And is in the worst physical condition. Yeah. And I'm like, that's amazing. You actually got there.
Right.
Imagine how much better you do.
Right.
Took care of yourself.
Yeah.
Cause I do think it's an indicator of excellence and that you can, you know, so from that story, if you're feeling stuck generally, I would start there. If that's something you're not doing, man, that's an easy way to get that energy flowing, and just like creatively too, right? Intellectually, all that stuff. Entrepreneurship wise, if you're feeling stuck, like you want to try something, man, it's a little bit of courage. It's a little bit of grit. It's a little bit of trial and error. Like I just did a solo podcast on this 2 weeks ago. It's like you're scared, do it anyway. You're not sure, do it anyway. You don't have the wherewithal right now, do it anyway. You just have to start.
You're right. And if you take care of the health and wellness, you'll be probably have more courage to be in the mindset to do it anyway.
Oh,
so it really goes back. It's just start where you are, right? Don't try to be Jamie Fitzpatrick at his level of fitness or be like anyway, just wherever you are, be better than yesterday and start. And I think it will carry over to all areas. So I love that answer because I agree with that answer. Jamie, with all the experiences you've been through, the ups and downs, the business, the health, the wellness, like what do you think is one of the most important lessons that you've learned in your life up to this point? If you were to share something, if you were to reflect looking back.
Oh man, I'm gonna sound like, I don't know what this is going to come across, but I think we're all interconnected. I'm not going to get too woo on you or anything like that, but I think we're all connected in some way. I think it's really easy to be kind to people.
Mm.
I think that's a missing ingredient for a lot of people in all aspects. I don't think you have to be this brutal boss to be good at whatever or entrepreneurship. And I know there's some sharks and cutthroat people out there who run their business that way and have found quote unquote success. I'd argue they may not be successful in their personal life though, or in their relationships.
Right.
But because I think success has to paint that brush across all of the things to be successful. Money isn't the indicator. I'd say my greatest joy, and I'm not the nicest guy in the world, and I can actually, you know, I can be like a situational extrovert if you want me to be. I can be the quietest guy in the room or the loudest if you want me to be. But I think being kind to people is so important. I really do. And
we need more of it.
Yeah, and you don't have to like, and I don't know what the word, even like saying being kind, I don't know if that's the right word. I think in today's day and age, and things are really hard for people, maybe they always have been hard. We just have social media now telling us how hard everything is too.
Right.
I just think people need some love, and they need some grace, and they need someone that they know or even don't know to come over and say, hey, you're doing okay. Like things are okay. And you're a good human being. And I try to compliment people now that I don't know, like even in the gym. You know, I actually went up and this is going to sound a little weird, but like I went up to this girl, she was probably like 20 years old and she was working so hard in the gym. And the first thing, of course, I say to her, because nowadays, whoa, you can't say anything to anybody, right? This is what I said to her. I said, A, I'm old enough to be your father. B, I'm happily married to a beautiful. No, this is how I opened the conversation.
Right.
Male to a beautiful woman. So I said, but I said, you are so strong at 20. I said, the way you're working out is, I told her, that's going to serve you so well in your life. And she kind of at first was a little bit, and then she's like, oh, once she knew I wasn't like, she was like, oh, thank you. I appreciate that. So yeah, no problem. And I try to find those moments.
Yes.
I always say like we're always so used to catching people doing the wrong thing. Try to catch people doing the right thing.
Yeah.
And catch them doing the right thing.
And give them that compliment, you know,
We
need more kindness. We need more love, you know, and people are hurting, you know, there are people that are hurting more people than not, and they're not willing to really open up. And that one little smile of holding the door open for somebody could be something that just kind of jars them, because you don't know what people are going through. So I love that. More kindness, more love. That's great. Jamie, do you have a favorite book that in all the books that you've read that you always go back to? Or a favorite author for the audience, if people like want to get started? Like I always say, my favorite author to this day has always been John Maxwell.
I was just going to say his name.
Were you?
Yeah. I mean, I like Dave Ramsey a lot.
Yes.
You know, I like Maxwell's great. I do like Brendan Burchard stuff. Yes. I mean, there's so many, you know, like I'm actually, you know, on my walks, I'm listening to Goggins again. I like to mix it up, but you know what? I even love Green Lights by Matthew McConaughey. I found that.
I have not, I've heard that's good. I have not. That's one. Everything else you said, I have not read that.
Yeah. It's good.
It's good.
It's good. It's like I remember I'm listening to an Audible and I remember, I think I was actually going for a run and it got to the moment in the book where he gets his first big acting role. And I stopped and I was cheering for him because the way he tells the story, like it's so cool. Yeah.
No, I'm going to do it. I mean, my first book I read was Compound Effect, Darren Hardy. And that kind of opened my eyes to, I think, the entrance to personal growth. And that's
Slight Edge,
Jeff Olson. So it's another, there's so many. Yeah. So I guess my last question is, if you were to, you know, this was your last day, how would you want to be remembered?
Woo! You're trying to make me cry. How would I want to be remembered? Man, I think just like a productive member of society. And I hope I've had an impact on people, a positive one. I really just want my kids and my family to be proud of me.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, because I think if I accomplish that, then I've done some of the right work in between.
Absolutely, you know? Love it. Absolutely.
I think just providing a good, you know, a mentorship father, you know, and just really doing the right things for them as best as I can. I hope that's how I'm remembered. Yeah.
Well, Jamie, I want to just like close out and say, I respect and honor you for what you have done and accomplished, whether through the business that we've done together, watching you as a leader, as a dad, what you've done with your kids, seeing your two kids, the impact you made on your wife and the team that you guys have, and now seeing her, you know, thrive, because it's not just her, it's both of you. And you've done it, and that wouldn't be there if it wasn't for you and getting the CEO award in our company. And I always say this, you know, iron sharpens iron, and you've accomplished so much. You're somebody that I wish was my neighbor, somebody that I want in my inner circle, right, Jamie? But I have to like honor and recognize what you have done and continue to do. And it's absolutely amazing. And thank you so much for being on the podcast today. It means a lot. Thank you again, and I appreciate all you do. And for the listeners, please share this episode, leave comments, find Jamie, go listen to his podcast, find his wife. She's another person brilliant you can learn from, the both of them. They are a power couple, and you can learn so much. So, Jamie, thank you so much, and everybody, we will talk to you soon.
Bye-bye. Appreciate you, David. Thank you.
You're welcome.
You have been listening to the Fitz Life Unfiltered podcast with Jamie and Kim Fitzpatrick. Please share this with your friends, family, and everyone looking to level up in their life. Leave a review and smash the shit out of the subscribe button. All resources and contact info are in the episode notes. Thank you for listening.